Hi, friends, and welcome back to the podcast. I want to let you know that there's a pretty significant trigger warning for this episode. My guest, Hillary Momberger Powers, is nothing short of the most resilient person I've ever met on the planet. But she does discuss child abuse, sexual assault, pornography, and generational trauma. Now, these subjects are beyond difficult. They're heartbreaking, let alone something we don't like to hear about. So if this episode is going to hurt your heart in any way, please do skip this episode. I want to tell you, though, that even though the conversation with her was painful and sometimes really challenging, hearing her spirit now and her voice and how she orients herself to the world, it changed my life. It changed my idea of what humans can go through and how they can sometimes triumph. Hillary herself is nothing short of a miracle. And, you know, I have so much to say about her, including the really fun fact that she started in front of the camera at 5 years old when she landed her first audition as Sally Brown in the Peanuts cartoons. And then, as a child actress, her star was born. She worked nonstop until her early teens, when then, as you'll hear, her path went sideways. So now, my interview with Hillary Momberger Powers.
And I turned around and I felt this ease and comfort. I was there for like an hour and a half, and I started to walk back underneath the PCH. And in the time, I get chills every time I say it. In the time that I walked, I was talking to my mother. Someone had written in spray paint on this brick wall, "It's never too late to have a happy childhood." It's funny because I remember going to parties and, you know, I live in that world, that Hollywood world, and they'd say, "Who are you?" And I'd say, "Oh, hi, my name's Hillary Momberger Powers." And they go, "What do you do?" And I go, "Well, I love walking on the beach. I love running. I love riding bikes. I love riding horses. I love sitting in the sun and feeling the sun on my face. That's what I do. What do I do to make money?" That's a totally different ballgame, right? So it's kind of funny because we're so attached to what we do. And what do? I like to spend time with people I love. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And I like to be of service. That's what I do. I like helping people. That's what I do. So I got tired. You get a little tired of announcing, having a label behind your name, like, you know, like MD or ADHD, you know, ADD, you know, I got to have a number, got to have a letter. What if I just talk about who I am as a human being? Like, wow, what makes me tick? So, but if you want to know what I've done for a living, so I'm a combo package. I grew up in the film industry at 5. Became the voice of Sally, which many people know. And I was very ashamed of it for a long time. Now I'm like, wow, lucky me. And I was an actress as a kid. Good girl turned bad. I've been to nursing school. I've been to art school. I've been to film school. I've been to massage school. I was going to be a chiropractor. And I worked on 300 plus movies and television over the years. And now today I am so blessed to have made so many unbelievably horrible life mistakes that it has given me A, gray hair, and B, it's given me just a trough full of wisdom and knowledge to help another human being. Thank you, God, for letting me fall on my ass over and over and over. Because I got to say, help. And now I get to help other people. So that's what I do.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. That's such a great answer. My second question, you know, usually is when you were a child, what did you want to be when you thought about growing up? But it sounds like when you were a child, you already knew what you wanted to do. And at five, you were acting. I mean, would you agree or no?
No, because I mean, what do you really know when you're five? Like, I'm just figuring out my senses. Like, I'm still figuring out what smells good, what tastes good. Think about it. 5 years old. Ooh, it's green. Yuck. I can't eat it. Right. And then you're going to ask me what I want to be when I grow up. I can't even eat a pea. Right. You know, I smell coffee and it's like, ew, today it's like, where is it? I want to put it in my veins. Right. So who am I? Right. So at 5 years old and as a kid, I think when our parents say, what do you want to be when you grow up? If we step back and realize that we're not really asking them to make a solidified decision, we're asking our children or our nephews or our whomever to use our imagination and our creativity. So that's really what we're building, that muscle in our brain. So when I was five, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I grew up in a lot of uncertainty. And I also, you know, we looked really good. So our parents, my mother was stopped traffic. She was so pretty. She was so pretty, pretty crazy. I always say there's always a flip side to a coin. But she was super pretty and very mentally ill. And my dad was very handsome. He looked like this, you know, 6 foot blue eyed salt and pepper hair at 25. He was very, very, very handsome and, you know, went to West Point. And my mother was this blonde, dirty blonde with sky, the blue eyes that make you look crazy. So blue. They were so beautiful. And like I said, she was suffering from alcoholism and no one knew it. You know, and so, and I'm sure mental illness, there was sexual abuse in her family. All these little secrets come out when you're older because we're too busy trying to figure out what we like, if I like peas or the smell of coffee, right? All that other stuff goes away. We have this mask on and la, 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 everything's wonderful. And so my parents met each other, drank. I always say drink, fight, and you know what, seven children later. And so my mother was a Jackie Gleason girl in New York City. She used to go, and here's Jackie, and introduce him in the sitcom in the 30s and 40s or whatever, some 40s, I can't remember. But she ended up meeting my father, who was handsome. And, you know, we get drawn to the alpha. It's almost like a natural thing. Like when we think somebody's strong and hot, we think, ooh, good babies, good stock. You know, even though they're the biggest pain in the butts in the world, but, and they don't know how to treat you well, but we think, oh, that'll make good babies, good family, good, yes. And so my dad was very handsome and was very educated. And, you know, like I said, he went to West Point and joined the Air Force and worked for Lockheed and CIA. And like, he was like alpha. And here was my mother who couldn't wait to get out of her family. And she got married to this guy who was going to rescue her from sexual abuse. And it's not a new story. This happens every single day. Like the women that I have crossed my path that I've been able to give to, it's such a normal story. And it breaks my heart. And there's so much healing that has to be done that we want him to fix me, or I want God to just take my pain away. And God's like, I can give you courage and strength, but I'm sorry, you're down here. You know, I'll guide you, but I'm not going to take it away because you're going to, if I take your pain away, you'll no longer need me. So, you know, all of a sudden here I am, you know, she has all these children and she doesn't really want any of them, but she likes the feeling of getting pregnant and there's something elusive about that. It's like everybody tells you, you're so beautiful. And oh my God, she's eating speed. It was back in the day when she didn't want to get fat when she got pregnant. It's like, hello, newsflash, you get fat. And so anyhow, so, you know, was it did I become an addict and alcoholic because of that? Or did I become because I put the drink in my own mouth? I'm going to take responsibility, because if I keep blaming the world, I never get better. So I drank. It may have pushed me towards that way, but I'm the one who said, yeah, give me another one and another and another and another. So my parents decided, since my mother had to give up her career, she was going to put her kids in. So I being brought up in this trauma, and I talk a lot about trauma because that's my keynote, is no longer leading with your wound. When you're in a traumatic situation, I don't care if like your dad died, or I do care, but if your father died, or you got in a really bad accident, or you lost a brother or sister, or you had money and you're poor and you live in a foster home, these are very shaking events that throw us off our game. I call that trauma. Because people think, well, I didn't have anything traumatic. So we kind of didn't have any money. That's traumatic when you're grading yourself and you're looking at your friends and you're judging your, there's some trauma that's happening, maybe low grade, but it still affects your next indicated step on what you choose from that moment on. So here I am around with my mother and father. They're fighting, there's drinking, there's police, there's my dad's beating my mother. And I'm like, all these kids going, hi, and then we get dressed up on Sundays and we go to church and we put our vest on. And the priest would say, oh, you have such a beautiful family. Oh, I love my children. And then my mother would go back in the car and say, shut your goddamn mouth, you kids. And then beat us up. Like it was so confusing for a child. You tell everybody you love us, but when you get back home, you rip us out of our beds with our hair. And she was very mommy dearest, almost carbon copy of mommy dearest. It's very, just entitled, and I loved my mother because I'm supposed to. And I'm hoping mommy will change. Don't think I didn't bring that characteristic into all of my relationships. Here's my first core relationship. And so I'm growing up always in fear. Is she going to hit me? Am I going to be in trouble? So when she takes us down to Hollywood, because now we're going to be in glamour, I get my first job. I become Sally, Charlie Brown Peanuts. Did I want it? What do you think I wanted? I wanted to make mommy happy. Because mommy was always unhappy. Like she was always yelling and screaming, and maybe this will make her happy. So what do I start building? I start building this character. Remember, I'm in my first years. I'm trying to find out what smells good, feels good, tastes good, hears good. My seeing, tasting, touching, feeling, smelling. I'm developing all my senses that create this Hillary. Now it's like, loud noises I get afraid of, and someone lifts their arm and I flinch and I want to be good. So in trauma, there's three things. I call it the triangle. You're either a people pleaser, that was me, a loner, the one that always disappears and doesn't come and quiet and doesn't talk. We see a lot of that, or the controller, the bully. That hates everybody, takes their lunch, and they're not doing it because they're mean. They're doing it because it's their way to survive. Because when you're in trauma, it's fight or flight, live or die. And if you're not in an ecosystem where it's just calm and stabilizing and you feel safe and you know that if someone yells at you at school, you can go home to mommy and she'll hold you. I didn't have any of that. It was like, oh, I'm going to be late for an audition. Oh my God. Remember, I was 7 and some guy tried to grab me on a dirt road. And apparently he did grab my best friend. And he grabbed me and I pulled out of my jacket and I ran and I jumped over a fence. I mean, the guy was going to obviously kidnap me or some kind of sex something. And I jumped over the fence and I hid in the backyard and I kept thinking, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. mom's going to be mad. I missed my audition. And I called the house. Finally, the woman walked outside and she said, what are you doing in our backyard? And I said, somebody tried to grab me. She said, oh my God, let me call your mother. You know, it was in the 60s, late 60s. And they called my mother. And my mother said, God damn it, you missed an audition. Get her home now. I was in trouble. So that built another side of my character. How are you doing? Great. Everything's fine. No, it doesn't hurt. That's okay. Oh, you can take advantage of me. That's okay. Do you love me now? Do you love me now? Are you my daddy? Do you love me? Are you better? So I start building this character. I'm always fight or flight, live or die. And so when I take this character into my acting, it sounds great. But see, you're judging me by my outsides. We all do that. I'm guilty of it. I ask God to please help me see what he sees instead of what I see. And then I'm judging you by how I feel. Because if I'm scared all the time, I don't trust you. You're different than me. You're scary than me. If I'm angry all the time, I hate everybody. I don't like anybody. I'm not going to have friends. Now, I'm a kid. I'm a child. And so many children get raised in this system, you know, this broken emotional system. And then you throw in God and you think, love your mother and father, go pray to Father Art in heaven. I'm like, no way, I'm not praying to another parent. I got some at home. That's my first definition of parents and who's going to take care of me. And I'm thinking, I'm Catholic at the time. I'm a recovering Catholic. Sorry if you're Catholic, but it's left me with a bad taste, but I love Jesus. So here I am praying to this God I don't understand, I don't feel, saying, God, how come mommy keeps hitting me? What did I do wrong? Will I be a good girl tomorrow? Where's daddy? He's always gone. Well, my dad's working 9,000 hours a day. Even though I'm making a lot of money, my mother has to have the car, the house, 13 horses. Why? Don't ask me. I've got horse taking, you know, I'm very artistically educated. I can dance. I can sing. I can, you know, I can ride horses. I was champion. I was doing dressage and doing 3-day events and great. I can't even get on a horse now because I have so many herniated discs, but no. But so anyway, so here I am trying to be perfect for this mommy because I want mom to be okay. And we all, there's so many, it's funny because, you know, when you have a broken family and mother and father divorced, which is very normal, almost like that's the new norm. There's always a lot of pressure on the parent, the mother or the father. And because kids are like sponges, and I'm developing my hearing, tasting, touching, seeing, and smelling, my senses, I'm growing them. I'm very attuned to your senses. So when dad comes home, he's working all these hours and he can't make the ends meet because he doesn't have a second income or the mother, or I take it in. We feel it. Kids feel it. We don't just go, oh, daddy's working hard. We go, oh my God, it's my fault. Because I'm a kid. Everything's about me. I haven't solidified my inside so I can emerge into the world. And when it gets fractured all the time, I'm trying to patch up holes, emotional holes constantly. And then I can't grow emotionally because I'm thinking I'm patching up holes all the time. So I'm praying to God and I'm saying, God, if you love me, kill my mom and dad and put me in my best friend's house. You know, I'm very black and white as a kid. Oh, there's mom pulling me out of that bed by the hair and telling me she should have aborted me and she hated me. And so I'm getting like, oh, why am I here? And I'm stashing all these. In my program, in my 12-step, I'm in 12-step programs. Thank you, God. And I have been for ever since the 80s. And there's a thing called a principle that we look at our principles, and a principle is a truth that I live by. So one of my truths was only good girls get good things. So that's my elevator music in the back of my head. Because my mother used to say, you're such a bad child. No wonder nothing's good is happening to you. Boom. That goes in my head. Only good girls get good things. So here I am as a kid, already feeling fractured. So I'm not going to get anything good. So that is the truth. You know, when they say, I'm just owning my truth. You know, what is your truth? You better do some deep diving, because you think you're thinking something. But deep, deep, deep down in my basement, I call the subconscious unconscious. That's the truth that's driving me and making every decision. Every single decision I pick is from that old idea that I need to expose it. So when I think that only good girls get good things, I pick bad guys. I pick crummy jobs. I pick sleazy clothes. I think I need to show my breast off and my body all the time because I'm not a good girl. Remember, that's in the back of my head. And then I go, I just want to have a family. I just want someone to love me. Well, no one's going to love me. I've just thrown myself in front of somebody. I'm like trash to them. You know, boys like to dig for toys. They like hunting. You know, they're not hunting. It's already in your face. You know, I say to the girls I work with, remember, cats don't chase dead dogs, dead mouse. But if you're just like, here I am, it's like, they'll look it over. So anyway, so here I go, and I got all these principles I'm living by, and I'm trying so hard to do things, and I'm putting another mask on. They used to say, smile, look cute, don't, you know, screw this commercial up, or you won't be, you know, your brothers and sisters are going to starve. Are you okay with that? My mother used to say, and I go, oh my God, I got to take care of them. Another principle I live with. I have to pay for everyone, take care of everyone in order for me to be loved. So here are my trauma. These are my wounds that I bring into my teenagers, I bring into my adult years. And I wonder why I can't have any functioning relationships. I wonder why I pick people that aren't aligned with me. I wonder why I don't pray, because I thought that I'm not a good girl and God doesn't like bad girls. So I'm not going to believe in God. God's not there. I'm in purgatory. I really thought I was going to be in, I thought I was in purgatory. It's like, every day it was like, oh, I had blisters on my hands at 7 and 8 from stress. You know, I bit my fingernails to the quick. It was bleeding all the time. You know, my mother used to say, stop fidgeting. We call it ADD. I call it trauma. Undealt with trauma. Like, how can you stabilize when inside you're just like, I'm not enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm just not enough. That doesn't come from today. That's my old, old, old stuff deep in the basement. I got to dig it out. You know, and I can't go in there alone. I got to go with God.
Yeah.
I'll be chucking out things and he's like, no, you need that. I know you can't see it now, but I can foresee things. Remember, I'm in charge. So I don't even know what your question was. I went so deep.
Well, actually, you really beautifully, I asked you what you wanted to be when you grew up, and you really beautifully talked about that. And then also talked about my second question, which is, you know, did you grow up in a religious household, and told about the evolution of your faith or your connection to God or non-connection for a while. And exactly why I'm just wondering now, you've been an actress and been in commercials for quite a while. I know now, since you've told me that your mother, you know, put this insane amount of pressure on you, to take care of your siblings, to feed the family through acting. Was there any part of acting or being in commercials that was enjoyable? Did you enjoy any of it?
Well, when I was a kid, okay, so when I met like Bill Melendez and Charles Schulz, they're so fun. They just wanted to meet Hillary because I have a giddy personality. I'm a middle child, so I'm always sussing out. I know everything that's going on. My husband's like, how'd you see that? I'm like, dude, I know everything that's going on. It's just in me. Trauma builds characteristics, you know? So when I was doing it, it was fun at first. I couldn't read it until I was 11 years old. Yeah, I couldn't sit and read a book because I was on set all the time. I mean, I worked a lot. There was only four channels and I was doing commercial after commercial and they took time. Now they just slap it together in a day. It's like in and out. Everything's quick, quick, you know, time has sped up or maybe not. Maybe we're just want to make more and more and more. Ego's never satisfied, I always say. But so I would do these, I would meet them and I get to eat sugar, which is great for any kid. And I got away from my mom. And I got somebody nice to me and it was so foreign. They would say, oh, honey, are you okay? And I go, I'm fine. Aw. And they give me hugs and I didn't get a lot of love as a kid. You know, you almost, I got it from my brothers and sisters. Thank God. We used to hold each other, you know, because if a kid is not held, it does not grow well. It's like, it's a part of the, of growing. And so thank God I had all my brothers and sisters. We would, you know, we were living, we used to say we're living with Satan and we're like, you know, the ship's going down. Let's hold on to each other. And, you know, and it was at the time when nobody talked about what was going on behind the door. You had this stiff upper lip. Everything's so great. No, God, you guys are so great. What a great family. Uh-huh. You know, I wish I lived with them. I kept thinking. So I didn't know. I had that. That was fun to that. But once I found out that my mother had taken my money and put it in a bank account, I remember the day when I went through her drawers, because I'm a kid, I'm snoopy. I'm going to snoop through my parents' stuff. I'm going to look. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I'm just curious, you know. And I found a bank account where everything in it was down to like $5,000. And I thought, oh, I don't have any money coming to me. And that's when I realized I was not being taken care of. And we had moved to back east and we came back and I lost Charlie Brown. I was 11 going on 12 because my voice changed. And that's when I found the money that was there, not there. And my mother said, you're not making any money. Maybe we should put you into porn. And I thought, oh my God, I got to get out of here. So my fear, people pleasing, loaning, I started drinking. I started becoming the loner in my triangle. And then I became the controller. Nobody's going to take. I hated God. Why did I, what did I do to get this? Like I thought I was being punished. So there I thought, I don't care. I'm just going to end up self-destructing. And I ran away from home and got arrested for, for burglary, stealing cars, assault and battery. And I finally went to youth authority and went to juvenile hall for 6 weeks and was released to a foster home at 14. Now, and no one knew what I did as a child because I was so ashamed of it. Because I was supposed to be this star. And I was, my mind that said, I'm not a good girl. I'm a throwaway. I made it happen. Because when you don't have God in your life, this is a really important sentence. When you don't have God in your life, who do you have? Your ego. How you doing? I'm amazing. Look at how hot I am. I starved. I work out. Ego, ego. And what is the ego's job? Its job is to become God. But here's the tricky part. The ego is never satisfied. So nothing is ever enough. Money's never enough. Sex is never enough. Food is never enough. You're not going, I'm not. Here I am vomiting 10 to 15 times a day. I'm bulimic. I hate myself, but I'm starving because I'm trying to be fed. I'm so starving. I'm starving for love, food. And then I throw it up. I'm enraged over how disgusting I am because I'm judging myself. That's what the ego does. It's the judge and jury because I'm God. So yeah. Either I'm amazing or I'm the biggest piece of you know what. Because I got no God. I hate God. God abandoned me. I want nothing to do with God. You know, and so by that, all those things, my whole life fell apart and lived homeless and lived on the streets and sold myself and did a lot of things that I'm not bragging. It's nothing to brag about. But I am so grateful all these things happened. It's like making a huge soup. God put so many things inside my soup to make it a masterpiece because he made me. And if I didn't go through all these things and I didn't overdose and say, if there's a God, please stop my grandma's seizure. And it happened. There was an aha moment. Did all of a sudden I went and started walking on water and went to the pearly gates and became, you know, Virgin Mary again. Oh, no. It became the first crack to my very, very hardened heart.
I just want to say how sorry I am that you grew up with a mother like that. I had a mother who was a profound depressive, and it was kind of before they had some medication, but it was before Prozac. So there were multiple years where, you know, she had to try a medicine and then it didn't work. And then we have to try another medicine. And, you know, I know about a lot of my mother's trauma from when she was young, but when you're a kid, you don't get it. You just think and I was the oldest. So, you know, my sister and brother were younger than me. And my parents got divorced the divorce started when I was in fourth grade and it lasted for like 2 years. But it was one of those things where after a while, I just wanted some peace because I was so tired. You know, I was just so tired of just juggling, you know, the smile on my face, the saying everything's okay. You know, I recently told a friend from high school about stuff that was going on and her jaw dropped and she said, "My God, we all thought you were the perfect house." And I said, "That's because we were all, me, my brother and sister, trying to maintain and keep the ship afloat," I guess you could say. You know, and I look back and I think to myself, my mother did the best that she could in a situation where she had faced incredible losses in her life. She was so alone. And she was raising three kids pretty much on her own. And I think sometimes adults are just small children that are just trying to figure it out themselves. And so there's a lot of forgiveness that has to happen.
Wounded children.
Yeah. You know, but one of the things that I struggle with even now is, you know, I need to forgive myself because I felt like I was a failure my entire childhood, that I couldn't manage, that I couldn't show up for my mom in a way that was good for her, that I couldn't help my brother and sister not feel totally devastated all the time. There's just so much that I still haven't forgiven myself for.
Well, can I work with you on that one for a second?
Sure. Yeah.
So when I get into that, I shoulda, coulda, wouldas, you know, I get into the God vote role. You know, and I get into a judgment role. How do you know that I'm just going to throw it out there. We're going to go in the middle. I always say, if you have a bumper on your car, that's to protect you from wrecking yourself. And then there's a little space in between. I got to let God in there. So you got to pull back and go, okay, well, wait a minute. So you couldn't protect your kids, your brothers and sisters. Wasn't your job, A, ego, crash, smash your ego a little bit. Large and in charge over here. And I have to remind myself too. I thought I had to support my brothers with money. I can't tell you how much I've given my brothers until finally my brother said, it's not your job. It's like, oh, I'm still, we still try to go back to yesterday to change our outcome of today. Can't happen. Like I need to simmer down. Like for, with you, it's like, you know, your brothers and sisters needed you to not be able to help them because it developed a character in them. They have assets that you don't because of it. And they have a relationship. If they haven't met God, they're going to start needing him more and more. So God lets all this stuff happen. Like God let me live out of pot. I lived on the streets selling pots and pans on the highway when I was 15 years old, you know, in Compton. Like I'm white. I'm so white. I didn't care. I didn't see any difference. I was raped. I was beaten up. I had all this stuff happen. And if I go, oh my God, how come no one rescued me? Oh my God, how come you didn't protect me? I can find the pony in the horse shit. And I go, wow, you know, I am one resilient woman. God, you have made me. You've made me see what a woman you created. Thank you, God. You know, you didn't take that. Guilt is not about guilt. It's about you knowing, separating yourself from your brothers and sisters. There's a little codependency there. Coco. I call you Coco for short. Where you back up and go, you know what? They need to find God just like you got to go to God instead of playing God. You know, it happened. Yes. Nothing happens in God's world by what? Mistake. You know, my brothers, they didn't have the experience I had. They had their own experience. And that happens so they can have a relationship with a maker called God, a father who art in heaven, meaning your heart, if you even have him in your heart. But I got to get so sick and tired of trying to do everything perfect to where I go, Uncle, I can't do this, God. I'm not. You are God. You are supposed, can you give me the courage and strength to stop judging myself? Can you give me the courage and strength to stop playing you? Does that make sense?
Oh, because yeah.
It's not so much that you can't forgive yourself. That's just this new age shit term. I've got to forgive myself. No. You know, it's God's job to forgive us. Not mine. Why? Because I'm not God. How about, God, can you please forgive me for trying to control, manage, and direct my world? I need you. And once you step back and see how much that control is really about our egos, you know, ego is the absence of the maker. I mean, it's good to have a little, I like dressing up and wearing the right colors and having my makeup on, right? That's like, but then that's the super ego is like, I gotta be it. I'm it. You know, oh my God. Like, I love it. My brothers used to say, finally got mad at me because I'm, you know, in my 20s and I'm starting to make money and I get back into trying to care for them. And they're like, stop fixing me. You know, get off the wood. We need the cross, girl. But I'm the strong one. No, you're not. Your life's falling apart. You're trying to fix ours. Whoa. Ego.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my gosh. Thank you. It's so good. I was already thinking I'm going to have so much fun producing this episode and re-listening to this over again. It's going to be such a gift to me. So thank you. Well, you know, I'd love to ask the main question, which is, I would so appreciate it if you would share, you know, you can share one story, you can share two stories of something magical, miraculous, or mysterious that's happened in your life, whatever you'd like to share.
Oh God, I have hundreds of them. So I'm going to talk about forgiveness. Which is a, you know, that's a part of not being God. So I had a bunch of years sober and I drank And but for the grace of God, I went to this AA meeting. I ran into a friend of mine, and he said to me, "Hillary, you're dying from the inside out." And I said, "You're right." He goes, "Can I'd like to help you." And he's a, you know, we normally guys don't help girls, but I've known him for 20 years. And he was like, you're dying. And he's Jewish, but he's having me read Sermon on the Mount. And I'm like, dude, what's up with this? Right. So I'm like, yeah, God's not there. So he said, "We're going to have to write an inventory. I want you to look at the character you bring in every situation. So I want you to look at your childhood, your teenhood, your adulthood." And this is a part of the healing process. Like, because I drive in the rearview mirror, I'm doing everything because I'm going, well, that happened before. I got to go there. That happened before. I got to go there. It's like I'm not even seeing what's in front of me because I'm so wounded inside. And I've done the John Bradshaw stuff, and it wasn't connecting because I kept judging. I hated my mother. I judged my mother. I blamed her for everything. I'm a recovering victim. It's their fault. It's that fault. It's the government's fault. It's because I did. And it's always an excuse for me to be happy. So my friend said to me, "Listen, you got to write down everything." And when you're writing down what your mother did to you, I want you to look at what you did in retaliation. What character did you become as a result of? Like my mother, I broke my arm and she said to me, "You're too expensive. It'll heal on its own. Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about." Message. And my principle is I'm not worth taking care of. I'm not worth anything. So I left home. I went back. I have to return back to mother because I'm hoping one day, mommy, you'll become the mommy that I see in the movies. And we still fight. And she pulled my hair again. She had this thing about, you know, likes pulling the hair. She was a little crazy like that. And I turned around and I broke her arm. What do you think I said to her? And I'm not proud of this. I'm not this woman anymore, so I can talk about her. I said, "Mom." She said, "Oh my God, you got to take me to the hospital. My arm's broken." I said, "Mom, we can't afford it. You know, stop crying or I'll really give you something to cry about." Now, who did I become as this character? And I'm an alcoholic. My mother was an alcoholic. I kept seeing her as different. And so I started looking at the character I had become as a result of what happened to me. I'm no different. Now I start gaining empathy. Wow. I don't think my mom wanted to leave us on freeways or not feed us or take my money or beat us all the time. I don't think she had children and said, "I can't wait to abuse my kids. Oh my God, 7 of them. Let's wreck them." I don't think she did that. I had to realize that hurt people hurt people. She came from a lot of pain. And she was trying to figure herself out by having all these kids. All of a sudden, I start, wow, mom, I get it. So I lived in Santa Monica, which is burned to shit. And it's no longer there, I hate to say it. But I lived up on the hill and I'd have to go underneath the Pacific Coast Highway because it was so busy. They had a tunnel. And my mother's ashes, I had taken when she passed, were at the ocean. They say, "Got to keep my mom, your enemies close to you." So I stuck them down the street from my house. That's right. Who's in power now? I'm control, right? So I go down and he says, "Now you got to go down there and make amends to her for the thing that you didn't return. And I want you to really connect with her." So she's dead. And I'm like, "She's dead. How can that happen?" "I want you to go and pray." So I'm praying to this God. I don't really know if he's there. I don't know if he loves me. And I go ahead and I walk underneath the freeway. I mean, the Pacific Coast Highway. It's a tunnel. Sit at the beach. I go over this list and I start telling my mom all the things I did to her as a result of what happened. And I owned my stuff. And I said, "Mom, I blamed you for every bad thing in my life, but actually I created 50% of it. Like I'm the common denominator." And then I said, "Actually, I did all of it because I really know that I could have been a different character, but I chose to be what I saw. And then I said, Mom, you know, I know you didn't want to hurt me. And I felt this relief. I prayed first. I said, God, I don't know if you're here, but help me feel something so I can heal. And I felt this sense of relief. And I felt like, wow, my mom probably did love me. She just was incapable of it. Poor woman. God, she died homeless downtown LA, drunk. Did she want it? Did I want to become an alcoholic? Did I want to become broke? Did I want to sell my body? Did I want to get raped? No, but I'm placing myself in positions to be taken advantage over and over and over. I'm not a victim. I'm a volunteer. And it all came on me and I was like, wow. And that was the first day. And it was 23 years ago. Yeah, because I just turned 24 years sober again. And thank you, Lord. And all of a sudden I felt this ease and comfort. And I thought, wow, I actually love my mother. Thank you, Mom. I wouldn't be who I am. God, if I would have had an easy life, I wouldn't be Hillary. And how many people do, how many people love me? How strong I am. I can figure anything out because I needed to. And I turned around and I felt this ease and comfort. I was there for like an hour and a half. And I started to walk back underneath the PCH. And in the time, I get chills every time I say it. In the time that I walked, I was talking to my mother. Someone had written in spray paint on this brick wall, "It's never too late to have a happy childhood." God, now I can have a different perception instead of poor, poor Hillary. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Mom. I quadrupled my income that year because all of a sudden I felt, why not me? Thank you, Mom. You know, I can go get a job. I can reinvent myself because of my trauma. And now I know how to heal my trauma in the day I'm in. And I help so many women do that. You know, I can get them out of it like that. Like, let's just stay in today. You know, I don't have to wait till I have money or I get there or I get that job or I get that degree. I can stabilize right now. That is from God. And it wouldn't have happened if my mom wasn't such a crazy biatch. She was cray, cray, crazy. Thank you, Mom. You're the best mom ever. And then my prayer life changed. I was like, all right, maybe you are. Maybe you planned this whole thing. Maybe this is what, maybe there is a pony in the horse crap. This is it. I'm who I am because of this crap. Lucky, lucky me, gratitude.
Yeah. Wow. Again, I feel like I'm just saying, wow. I have one word during this interview and it's wow. That is an astonishing story. And I'm just, there's so much to it. It's trying to just understand and comprehend, but also take in this powerful moment of gratitude and realization and understanding the gifts that were given to you and owning them. Also, by the way, I have discovered that part of my process, there's a lot of crying. I cry and cry. There's catharsis and I need the catharsis.
Here's your plant, sweetheart. Those tears are watering your new garden. Isn't that exciting?
It is. It is. It's. And, you know, I always I might. Of course, I'm feeling blue. I'm feeling angsty. But after I am done crying, it feels like such a huge release. It's like nothing I've ever felt before. It's like, wow, there's something else that's gone. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's something that you have to be intentional with and understand and embrace because it's the process can be exhausting and also heartbreaking. You know, I was seeing a therapist, a talk therapist for quite a while in Santa Fe when I was getting my Master's of Divinity and training to be a spiritual director. You have to see a therapist. Right. So I'd been seeing her. Yes. Yeah. And I think I'd been seeing her for 2 years. And finally I said during one session, you know what? I'm really, really grateful about what happened in my childhood with my mom, because it created me. And I'm pretty amazing. I'm strong. I'm independent. I can survive a lot of things. I'm resilient. And she said, there, that's what we're looking for. That statement, she said, amazing. And I thought, what?
I know. And the other thing is, you know, I need God. I need God. Don't think, you know, a parent wants his kid to say, I need you. Can you help me? They're like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't face me. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But I need God. I don't want you to do it for me, God. I want you to give me, I want to feel good about myself. Can you please help me, God? You know, I live in Florida. I just live in California. And I always say this to the girls that I work with. I'm like, okay, here's the deal. In Florida, it rains a little bit all the time. Think about crying. Little bit at a time. Little bit at a time. And then in California, torrential downpour. Bam. Just pouring. It's like we hold it in, we hold it in, we hold it in. And then we just cry. And then we're like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. Shut down. Shut down. Shut the pipes. I want you to think of the ground. I always say, look at the ground. Have you been out to Joshua Tree? There's like 7 trees out there. Hello? Florida? Palm trees, moss, because it's a little bit at a time. So that's why I want to get better a little bit at a time. I don't want to hurry up and get better. I didn't hurry up and got sick. I didn't hurry up and hate God. It was process. Now a little bit by little. So I always call it slow variety, like slow down, turbo. I go into my little kid thing. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there? It's like, whoa, turbo, slow down. Like, pause, take a breath. You know, that's why they said when we were kids, oh, you are you tired? Do you need a nap? Like, I got to stabilize myself, like little by little. So if you're crying right now, oh, that's wonderful. You're doing the Florida rain dance. You're going to have lots of grass, babe. You're going to have lots of gardeners.
I love that. I'm listening to you and this phrase just came up to my mind. So I want to say it is that you are wonderfully and fearfully made. And
amen, amen, right?
Yes. I was just thinking you are the living embodiment of that phrase. And what a gift to all the rest of us you are.
Oh, thank you. And ditto. You know, the boat's got to be filled if we're going to go to land and we're going to have a new adventure. So you're part of the boat. Like, we're all having new adventures all the time, all the time. I mean, perfect. I retired last year. No, I didn't. Like, now I love like going and speaking and going to retreats and going to colleges. It's like, I'm so excited. God, how can I share? How can I be of service? Now I'm not, it's not for me. I want to do thy will be done, not mine. I'm always taken care of. I've never been without a meal. Some days I wanted to be without a meal, but if I look back at my past, I've always been taken care of. And when I was looking to fix Hillary and do it for Hillary, like I said, without God, the ego's never satisfied. Now that I have God in my life, it's good. I'm okay in the day I'm in. It's pretty awesome.
A wrap on my conversation with Hillary, and make sure not to miss the Easter egg at the end of the outro, where Hillary gives me some great advice and we just tie a few more beautiful bows onto the end of this conversation. I need to thank her for coming onto the show and speaking with such candor, for being so open and vulnerable, because I do think and I do believe that she is an example of someone that we can look up to when we have hard times in our lives, when we reflect back on challenging times that have happened to us, we can look to Hillary and say, hey, we can rise as well. There's no doubt in my mind that her connection to Source, to Spirit, to God has made all the difference. And so I ask you this week, what is your connection to this great big world of ours? And how do you connect to that ineffable presence? I think we need that support. We need the knowledge that we're held in those arms, in those spaces, in that great cosmic energy, however you want to describe it. But Hillary definitely reminded me that we are all seen at each and every moment. Now here's the part of the outro where I ask you for ratings and reviews. If you like what you've heard, I would so appreciate you leaving a rating or writing a little review. They help other people find this little labor of love of mine. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Hillary. Rise, rise, and then rise some more. I mean, you don't get to an older age. I mean, even to your 30s or 40s, you don't get to that age without suffering some slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. And sometimes those slings and arrows can be incredibly painful, emotionally painful, physically painful, and hurt our very souls. But Hillary knows that that ineffable presence, that great big cosmic energy, whatever you choose to call it, has our backs and holds us and is there for us always when we want to start a conversation or just ask for help. So your task this week in being like Hillary is to remember that presence, remember that energy that holds each and every one of us and reminds us always and eternally to rise.
Beautiful. Oh, Hillary, thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you for your stories of, I don't know, the word that keeps coming up with for me is reconciliation. You know, you had this reconciliation later in life with a power that's greater than you, God, something that just, and your faith and your hope are kind of boundless, frankly. Just like listening to you. And I'm like, oh my goodness. What a model for the rest of us. And
really kind. Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, cool to believe in God. I'm just saying.
You'd have a t-shirt that says that.
I'm serious. I remember thinking, oh, I'm not going to become one of those Jesus freaks. Oh my God. They're so like, dude, I still, you know, God has a sense of humor. I still cuss sometimes, you know, I'm talking to the leopards, baby. I gotta speak their language, okay? No, but seriously, like, I'm not perfect. I don't want to be perfect. Then I'm dead. I don't want to not need God because I will perish.
Yeah.
Oopsie, sorry. And then I get excited. I can't wait to tell people there is a promised land. It's right here, right now. It's not over there. Over there doesn't exist. Only right now exists. Let's be in our promised land right now.
Yeah, beautiful. Man, I just keep thinking, preach, preach.
You're just good. You're good. Yes. Who knows? But I don't know where God's going to take me. I don't know. I don't care. I'm like, you know, I would say, buckle up, buttercup. It's going to be a bumpy one, I'm sure. You know, our world's really crazy right now. You know, it's siphoning God out. It's... You know, I just, you know, my heart's going to be judged. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to keep an open heart, open mind, open heart. Not, I want my heart mind open. I don't want my mind open.
You know,
I'm not going to do that by keeping it to myself. I'm going to do it by talking about it. And like you said, preaching about it, because I'm reminding, I'm putting it back into my mind. I got to go to God, go to God. I always tell my, when you're in doubt, just say God, 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 God. Because the thing is it's not that you're, it's changing your magnetic frequency. We're all energy.
Yeah.
He just went zing and boom, chocolate. Here we all are. We keep changing forms, new haircuts, you know, car, buggy, whatever. But it's still, we're atoms and molecules vibrating at a certain level. We become this mass. Hillary, boom, that's all I am. So I got to keep tapping into the source that keeps it going. So that's what I try to show people how to do it. And, you know, once you start doing it, you become infectious. You know, my first boyfriend said to me, Hillary, you have your funnel on backwards. Now, this is a 16-year-old and I'm 15. And he died of a heroin overdose. So he's like, I go, what do you mean? He says, you see life backwards. You keep thinking when I get over there, I'll be happy. And I turn my funnel around. Because if you think of a funnel, it's just like this, right?
Yeah.
You always have that pinpoint.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so brilliant for a 16-year-old. Like, I turned it around. I saw the big picture. It's not there. My movie starts here. So if you want to know how your outsides are doing, what's going on in the inside? Like, if it's crazy and it's erratic, you need to pause and just, God, be with me right now. But one of the things I did, because I can be quite the perfectionist. I mean, I'm on husband number four. I am not perfect. I always call him, every 10 years I trade in a new model. I'm like, tell my husband this time, I'm like, we're old. I don't think I'm going to trade it in because I ain't going to be driving it much. But so anyway, so a lot of the things that I've learned how to do, one of them is if I broke something, my mother would say, God damn it. There's the prepping of a perfect child. Oh my God. And your mother is exhausted. She's got three kids. She doesn't want any problems because she doesn't have energy, time, or anything. She's like, oh, fuck. They're screaming again. They're crying. Come on, you guys. We got to, shh. Mom's tired. She worked a long day. Here, I'll make the bed. I'll make dinner. There you are, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you've been a parent at 7 and 8 years old. This is where you get to, because I had to take care of the family. I'm supporting seven children.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pause. And this is where I get to, I don't reparent because my idea of parent is not the best ideal.
Yeah.
So I get to be the best foster mother ever who just wants me. So I say things like, oh, honey, you're tired. Why don't we take a nap right now? I do that inside my head. I talk.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Brilliant.
So I'm just saying this because I've had to do this. I have to go, oh man, honey, you are tired. Why don't we just, maybe let's get something to eat. Let's not, maybe not black licorice right now. Let's get an orange because I want a gopher, right? It's okay. And then I do stuff like this. Oh, honey. Because this is really what I want.
Yeah.
And then when I make a mistake, you know what I say? Oopsie. I fucked up. Oopsie. I made a mistake. And I laugh about it. Because my mind tells me if I make a mistake, I'm what? A mistake.
Yeah.
So I go, oopsie. So do a lot of oopsies.
Okay.
Do a lot of like, I want you to think of, I had a foster mom, which was great, but a foster mom's job is to love. That's it. It's been so traumatically tortured and had abuse that you have this mother that just goes, oh, honey, you want to sit next to me? You want some popcorn, honey? Are you tired? You want? So I'm going to send you my ebook. Just
okay.
But it'll help you.
Okay.
May help you practice too, but whatever.
Okay.
I don't care. I always say I can only eat so many food and wear so many shoes. Okay. Going to be out of here in maybe 10 years at this rate. Who knows? They may kill us with the spraying of the foods, but don't even start me there. Don't start me. So I know what I'm up against. So you can, when you stabilize your seeing, tasting, touching, hearing, smelling, it's the only way. That's trauma therapy. You can only simmer down when you feel safe and stabilized. And how do I do that? Oh, honey, are you tired? Do you want a nap? Mm. Do you want to cross some water? Are you thirsty?
Yeah.
Let's not do a soda. Let's get some water. I know you probably, I just cried. I need to replenish my salt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to replenish the water inside me.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, these are little things. So I start stabilizing. Then I can be a part of a community. I can feel some kind of like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wow, I love going to my church. I love going to my meetings. I love going to my friends. I can be a part of, then I feel a part of. When you're a kid and you're Captain Save-A-Ho, because that's what you were.
Yeah.
You fix everybody. You can't join a community.
Yeah.
You're in charge. Everything's going to be okay. It's okay. I'm okay. No, are you okay? No, no, no. I still have to clean that. Oh, shoot. Oh, God, I got to do my homework. Oh, no, oh, my God. I can't. Like, oh, God, I feel that. I can feel it in my.
Yeah.
So then when you stabilize yourself, because now you're the best stepmom ever. You're the best foster mom ever. You can still feel like you get in the community. Then you get some self-esteem, self-worth. You start going, wow, I took care of myself. Gosh, I went to sleep early last night. I just cuddled up with a blanket. Man, I have made myself the greatest food. And then you start getting self-worth and self-esteem. Then you can be productive. You cannot be productive until you have stabilized.
Yeah.
You've re-emerged into the world.
Right.
Because when you're in your head, you are your world.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
And then when you get to that productivity, then only then, my friend, can you be of service.